Please silence all electronic devices.
I think this is a great example of how quickly things can turn in politics.
I think it's going to be incumbent upon Biden, if he's the nominee, or Sanders, to pick a woman, and ideally a woman of color, as their running mate. Now, nobody believes that Greg Lindberg is the kind of guy who loves Danforth's brand of conservative religious right politics.
How do you know that?
Oh, come on.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the Bunker of Truth on West Jones Street in downtown Raleigh, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tabiri. Glad to have you along for our week in review. And, of course, we'll be taking a look at some of what happened on Super Tuesday. The conversation includes Becky Gray from the conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch.
How are you doing?
Hey, guys.
On what was a big night across the American South, Joe Biden carried North Carolina by a greater percentage than recent polls would have projected. Other top-of-the-ticket winners included Cal Cunningham for U.S. Senate, Roy Cooper for governor, Dan Forrest on the Republican side for governor, and incumbents Tom Tillis and Donald Trump. The biggest surprise might just have been the terrible performance by former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who has subsequently dropped out of the race. What was the most unexpected thing that happened on Super Tuesday in North Carolina?
Well, at the national level, I think it has to be that the great rush towards Joe Biden. I think I mentioned it actually at our Pints in Politics event last week in Chapel Hill that I sensed something coming in that direction, but I don't think anybody would have predicted at that time, a time actually when Biden was running maybe even behind in the polls, that a few days later he would sweep to such an enormous victory. So that had to be, at the national level, the presidential race, clearly the biggest surprise. For me, at the state level, maybe the Council of State race in the Republican lieutenant governor's race, that this complete unknown sort of swept to victory in the Republican primary, guy by the name of Mark Robinson.
Guy who became well-known thanks to a viral video that was recorded at a Greensboro City Council meeting. Becky, we'll pivot to you in just a moment, but you just mentioned Biden's very good, if not rebirth, of a night on Tuesday. Yeah. I talked to several people. I was at a party put on by the Democratic Party in mm-hmm. downtown Raleigh. I heard the word jomentum mm-hmm. several times. Jomentum seems to be real. I believe it was 10 of the 14 states he ultimately carried. Rob, how long should Bernie stay in this thing?
My goodness. You know, momentum's only as long as it lasts as long as your next race, right? Or your next game in sports.
Tomorrow's starting pitcher, yeah.
You know, next Tuesday could turn things around completely. The thing that I really sense is that the Democratic Party, the members of the Democratic Party, have very quickly determined, almost sort of organically, that beating Trump is everything. They want to beat Trump. They're willing to support whichever candidate they think can do it the best. There was a lot of concern that initially perhaps that Biden wasn't up to it, but people decided he clearly was. He got these endorsements. He's been funny and glib, especially in sort of one-on-one retail politicking. And they just decided he's the one with the best chance. And he has clearly the best chance of winning large numbers of African-American voters, enthusiastic support from African-American voters, which is critical for any Democratic candidate. As far as Sanders staying in, I can't imagine him getting out unless he just gets drubbed repeatedly. But he's already now said that he'll enthusiastically support whoever the nominee is.
Most unexpected thing from Super Tuesday.
Well, you know, really to piggyback on what Rob has said, I think that the turnaround for Biden was really surprising here in North Carolina as well as nationally. You know, and I think this is a great example of how quickly things can turn in politics. One reason why I think all of us follow these and are so fascinated with it. That was one. And then, you know, since then, we've seen Bloomberg drop out, we've seen Warren drop out. And so, you know, not only the significance the jomentum, you know, as you've mentioned, but also how this field is narrowing. And it's really coming down to Biden and Bernie. I don't see Bernie dropping out of this. I think this becomes a race between Biden and Bernie for those delegates going into the convention is what it looks like. I think we get rid of the extraneous candidates that we've had out there that kind of pulling one way or the other. So I think, you know, that was interesting that happened, the quickness that it happened, the definitiveness with which it happened, and then moving forward with this as we go forward. One thing, too, there's been a lot of talk, and I just did it, about, you know, how well Joe Biden did. The other thing that I think we have to remember, it's not just when you win a state, but it's the delegates and the percentage and the margins with which you win, because this is all a numbers game of gathering those delegates going into the convention. So he won. I think it was surprising that he swept so many states, but really looking at it, is how many delegates did he come away with? He came away with more than Bernie, but there's still a lot out there to be gotten. So it comes down to a numbers game, I think, from here on out.
The math.
Exactly.
We're not going to have a
brokered
convention. People were, you know, a week ago were saying, oh my gosh, there's going to be a brokered convention. It'll be chaos. It's not going to be a brokered convention.
You're convinced of that. You think that Joe Biden's going to get to 1991
delegates. Well, I don't know. I mean, when you have two big candidates, the math works out, and the other candidates basically pledge their support to that
candidate. And it certainly works better for Biden with Warren dropping out,
right.
Because although she, as quickly as Biden was gaining, she seemed to be falling behind. But any delegates that she would, it seemed like Bernie and Elizabeth Warren are much more ideologically close, that the same voters would appeal to them. So while they're splitting their delegates. So I think Warren being out of it, just changing that changes the math form. It doesn't change the formula, but it changes the way those things are calculated. I also was surprised with the lieutenant governor's race with, gosh, how many candidates did
Republicans
have?
Nine on the Republican side, six on the Democratic side.
And, you know, the thing going into this was, if there's one race where there will be a runoff with that many candidates, surely it will be the lieutenant governor's race. And I think social media had a tremendous impact on that race. That viral video of Mark Robinson from several years ago was repeated all over Facebook and Twitter and all of that. And obviously, Republican voters were looking at that. So I was surprised at the margin with which he ran. And also, you know, also another example of how quickly things can turn in politics.
Not a lot of Republican voters voted, though. The numbers, you know, it was interesting. I was struck by the fact that in the lieutenant governor's race, there were close to 1.2 million people voted in the Democratic primary. Only a little over 700,000 voted in the Republican primary, which says to me, you know, people didn't come out. There weren't any high-profile contests where Trump was unopposed, Tillis was
unopposed. The Democrat ballot was much more interesting than
so
the Republican.
You get a few hardcore
was.
People, and they can swing an election.
Mm-hmm. Couple of quick follow-ups. The overall voter turnout compared to the March 2016 primary was down about 35.7% to 31%. Couple of interesting points there. One, it was truly an open presidential race. Then we have a Republican incumbent. Also, congressional elections didn't take place here in North Carolina on March 15th of 2016 because a court had blocked the state's U.S. House districts, and we had a second primary in June. So there's that. And then the other thing I would note, just the greater level of interest on the Democratic side, Democratic ballots were pulled, 15% more were pulled this time around.
And that makes sense, yeah. I think. You know, last time the Republican primary on the presidential level was much more interesting. But Jeff, just another note, too. We kind of got a lesson in early voting and consequences of early voting and how that can sometimes
at
be risky.
At least in a primary.
In a primary,
you're not going to have your candidate drop out.
Right. Yeah, in a primary. But we saw
that
with, you know, after the early voting had started here in North Carolina, we saw two of the presidential candidates drop out. And, you know, so that, I think it sort of illustrated the advantage. And a lot of people like to vote early, and I think they should. But there's also a risk associated with it. And
Biden might have won by even more.
Did y'all vote early or on Election Day?
I voted on Election Day.
Me too.
Me three? No line. Want to talk about diversity of candidates. We're going to focus on some statewide races here. Top of the ticket on each side consists of three white men, president, U.S. Senate, governor. Then we have nine other Council of State races and three Supreme Court races, so 12 races. Of those dozen contests, Democrats are running eight women and either three or four people of color, depending on a possible runoff. Comparatively, Republicans are running two women and one candidate who is black, Mark Robinson, who we've mentioned from that lieutenant governor's race. What do you make of those different slates of candidates? Becky?
I don't make too much out of it. I mean, Jeff, really, until you've laid this out, that was not something that I was looking for. You know, I mean, I'm looking for experience, for, you know, what the candidate brings to the table. What their definition of the job is and how they're going to fulfill it. That's not something that I've looked at. I'm looking at the quality of the candidate.
Obviously, the Democratic Party is a more diverse party. There has a much larger minority membership and has made had more success, at least, in recruiting women candidates. There was a lot, frankly, amongst the websites I pay attention to and the social media feeds and the emails I get, a lot of Democrats are still very upset that, you know, there's still so many old white guys at the top of the ticket in there, and that the hope for finally breaking through with a woman nominee or for president wasn't fulfilled. I think it's going to be incumbent upon Biden, if he's the nominee, or Sanders, to pick a woman, and ideally a woman of color, as their running mate. So I think the Democrats realize that theirs is simply a much more diverse party. They're going to have to appeal to a broader base of individuals, and it's reflected in their candidates.
On Thursday, a federal jury found political megadonor Greg Lindbergh guilty on all counts of public corruption. One associate, John Gray, was found guilty on two counts, while associate John Palermo was found not guilty. Lindbergh and Gray are convicted of trying to bribe the state insurance commissioner, a Republican, Mike Causey. Lindbergh donated millions of dollars to Republicans and Democrats, including $2.4 million to causes that supported or backed Dan Forrest. He's the Republican gubernatorial nominee. As we record this, Forrest has yet to denounce those contributions or try to distance himself from Lindbergh in any way. Doesn't he have to do that at some point?
I'm not sure. I mean, you know, if you look at the question that was answered in this trial was, did Greg Lindbergh try to bribe an elected official, insurance commissioner Mike Causey, and the jury came back guilty on all counts. You know, I think what you're asking is there any kind of criminal activity with him making political donations, particularly those outside of this question with the insurance commissioner? So I'm not sure that what Dan Forrest or Wayne Goodwin or other Democrats, other public officials that received campaign donations, if there was, you can give campaign donations.
I'll let Rob jump in here in a second, mm-hmm. but let me clarify my question. I'm asking more of a political question. So that verdict comes down on Thursday morning within an hour. Within an hour, there's an attack ad from Governor Cooper's campaign against
Forrest.
You think
he had that queued up?
I do think he had it queued up. And I'm not judging or going to be an arbiter as to whether or not that's fair. I'm just saying that's the political reality of the next 8 months. So as we head toward this big governor's race, isn't it incumbent upon Forrest to in some way, shape, or form distance himself or say shame on him? Or
we have other accusations that are out there. There have been questions about Roy Cooper and a $58 million slush fund for the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. You know, just because there are accusations out there doesn't mean that there's any wrongdoing. And unfortunately, the nature of politics today is going to try to dig up everything that anybody can find on any of the candidates and throw it against the wall. And I don't know that there is, unless there is some sort of criminal activity, convictions of criminal activity, I don't really know that, you know, then we get into the whole thing of the whole political season is nothing but, you know, Jeff, I heard you did X, and you say, no, I didn't, and then, no, you know, Rob comes back. I think you need to be careful of that.
$2.4 million is $2.4 million.
Well, you know, $57 million for an alleged slush fund.
Cooper has made a defense in this. He has denied that he did anything wrong. Forrest, and here's, I'm going to read directly from a correspondence that I had Thursday afternoon from Andrew Dunn, who's a communications director at Dan Forrest for Governor. Hey, Jeff, we don't feel the need to comment on a trial that doesn't have anything to do with us. And if they're going to leave it at that, that's fine. But from a political standpoint, isn't it incumbent upon them to try to distance or pivot in some greater way?
I'm not a political advisor, okay. So I couldn't begin to do that. But, you know, as I understand it, still, you know, you were innocent until proven guilty. And so, you know,
Dan Forrest has not been charged with anything.
And that's my point. That's my point.
Okay. You waited patiently, sorry.
I sure did. Dan Forrest, as you say, took $2.4 million from a guy who's a convicted briber of public officials. Now, nobody believes that Greg Lindbergh is the kind of guy who loves Dan Forrest's brand of conservative religious right politics.
How do you know that?
Oh, come on. Look at this guy.
Did
you read the Wall Street articles about
Greg Lindbergh?
Have you read the Wall Street Journal articles about his personal behavior and his girlfriends around the country and the way this guy lives his life? I mean, this guy is clearly not someone who was giving money to Dan Forrest because he was enthralled with the message that Dan Forrest is delivering. Now, I'm going to say this, however, in terms of whether Dan Forrest needs to give his version of Richard Nixon's checkers speech, which as I was walking over today, I remembered that famous speech that Nixon gave when there were allegations of impropriety and it saved his political career. And I think really it would probably behoove Forrest to do that because he's going to have nothing but negative ads. The truth, however, is that the people who are devoted to Dan Forrest are going to vote for Dan Forrest. In Alabama, the people that were devoted to Roy Moore voted for him, even though he was credibly accused of sex offenses. So, I mean, the notion that some sort of vague allegations that
Dan
he gave $2.4
million.
Well, people are accusing him.
This is how misinformation
is. No, it's not, Becky. The man accepted $2.4 million from a convicted briber. What is this man giving $2.4 million to Dan Forrest for when he's thrown around hundreds of thousands of dollars in a clear effort to bribe the insurance commissioner? The notion that that was white and pure as the driven snow is just,
You're making a lot of assumptions.
I'm not making any assumptions. I'm telling you what is an obvious question that's going to be asked, and Dan Forrest is going to get this repeatedly, and I think it would be in his own best interest to give the money back and make a speech and say it was a mistake.
So $2.4 million, and to be clear, not all of it went directly to these went to PACs that support Forrest. They went to a number of places. Do you think that now that Lindbergh and this associate have been convicted, but focusing on Lindbergh because it was his money, is it in the best interest of Forrest to redirect this money to a charity or to try to send it back?
It may be, but unless there's some sort of criminal activity that has occurred with him getting, not him, even those PACs getting those donations.
Politicians, though, get donations all the time that are tainted. They're from the wrong people, and they send them off. They don't want to be associated with them. I think it would be the smart thing to do on his part to just say, this guy was a bad apple. I didn't really realize it. He was nice to me. I think I've now learned that he's a very bad apple, and I want to disassociate any connection with him.
What seems to be the tack that he's taking is, I didn't do anything wrong. There's no accusations of anything criminal, any kind of criminal activity. There's nothing to see here. Let's talk about the issues that are important to North Carolinians and move forward with this campaign.
That's absolutely the approach he's taking, and I'm just trying to understand if that is detrimental.
I don't know. We will see as this campaign goes on, and I guess we'll really know in November.
That's for sure. Mm-hmm.
Becky Gray, Senior Vice President at the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield is Director of NC Policy Watch. Enjoy your weekends.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Our discussion about the week in state politics can be found wherever you get your on-demand programming. You can also catch part of this conversation at 4:50 on Friday afternoons during All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio. Our next long-form one-on-one podcast will come out a week from Tuesday. That's the 17th of March, so keep your ears peeled for that one. Remember to subscribe to the program, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher. Tell a friend, colleague, neighbor, somebody else about it, as well as we try to grow that listenership. For Becky and Rob, I'm Jeff. We'll talk to you again soon.